Welcome back to Work Week. This is Steve Zeltzer. We're coming up this coming March on the third anniversary of the nuclear meltdown in Fukushima, Japan. And it is coincides with a issue of the sailors, the 70,000 sailors and their families in Japan in a operation called Operation Tamagotchi. In Japan at that time, the sailors and U.S. military forces were organizing to help with the people who were affected by the contamination and by the tsunami. It just has been recently announced that the U.S. Department of Defense has decided to walk away from an unprecedented medical registry of nearly 70,000 American service members, civilian workers, and their families caught in the radioactive clouds blowing from the destroyed nuclear power plants at Fukushima. These explosions and the contamination affected not only the people of Japan, but U.S. military forces, and now we have a situation in which these military forces themselves have become contaminated, as well as a threat to their children. So joining us this morning is Paul Garner, who's a San Diego-based lawyer, and Mike Seaborn, who is a land-based sailor in Japan. And they are part of an effort to defend the sailors and military forces, U.S. military forces, who were contaminated as a result of the meltdown in Japan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Good morning. This is Paul Garner. I'm happy to be with you this morning.
Now, Paul, you are a lawyer who is handling the cases of more and more sailors and others. What exactly happened during the meltdown in Fukushima, and how did it affect these sailors and U.S. military forces?
Okay, well, Fukushima and the rest of Japan were hit with a triple whammy on March 11th, 2011. And it consisted of a magnitude 9 earthquake, which is the fifth largest earthquake recorded historically, and followed within, you know, perhaps 30 minutes, 35 minutes, by a tsunami that delivered a 20-meter, 100-mile-per-hour wave against the Fukushima nuclear power plant situated on the shoreline in Fukushima Prefecture in Japan. And the third part was the release of radiation in the area surrounding the nuclear power plant initially. There are reports from workers who are within the power plant on that Friday that they saw cracks in the reactor and cracks in where steam was venting into the building, suggesting that radiation had already begun to leak before the tsunami hit.
So there were and are sailors, U.S. military forces in Japan, and
Steve, I'll just interrupt you for a minute, okay? There were, in this Operation Tamagotchi, Tamagotchi means friend or friends. It was a humanitarian effort to deliver necessities to the people of Japan. And for example, those aboard the USS Ronald Reagan, which is CVN-76, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier that cost us $4 billion to build, can take a crew of 5,500 people. Not sure that many were aboard. But there are other ships that responded in the 7th Fleet, the USS Cowpens, the USS Washington, and the Essex, and a number of others that were mobilized in order to ferry water, food, blankets, supplies to an area which had no power. It essentially was March. It was very cold, and people had no food and water. So what happened was the Reagan was diverted from, it had been off the shore of Korea. They thought they were going to go, the sailors thought, oh, we're going to go to Japan. We've been to Japan before. We like to go to Japan. Little did they know that they were going to have to enter a radioactive zone and deal with nuclear fallout, which they couldn't see.
Okay, so, Mike, this is Mike Seaborn. That was Paul Garner, a lawyer for injured sailors and military personnel. Mike, you were land-based in Japan. What happened after that tsunami, earthquake, and Fukushima nuclear blast?
Well, we actually, we kind of were put on alert, and we had a quarters with the commanding officer, and he basically told us that we're on standby, and anything could happen. We may be evacuating. We may be going up north to help, and we didn't know. And then about an hour later, he came back and told us that we had one day to pack up, and we were going to move to the Air Force Base Misawa, which is up north, to be able to assist in the relief efforts. All the other squadrons were going to evacuate to Guam to get away from the radiation plume. They said there was going to be a evacuation for the family members. If they wanted it, it was a voluntary evacuation. And we should take our cars, take our houses, where we lived, and we needed to put our name, phone number, you know, put it in the dashboard of the car just in case it gets impounded because we may never come back to Atsugi again.
And were you involved personally in trying to help the people in Fukushima?
Well, my job was they tagged me to be the radiation decontamination officer. I was not actually in the aircraft, like the aircraftman assisting, but it was my job to take a team of members and to decontaminate the aircraft, the equipment, and the people when they came back from flying into the area.
And what did you find out? Were you trained for this? Was that part of your job?
They gave me a 2-day training course. It was basically we sat down with a bunch of nuclear experts, and they said they were going to shove a 3-year nuclear course in 2 days. So that was the training I received. It was me and about 33 other individuals that were basically, we were trained how to read contamination, how to decontaminate, and how to contain it. And that was about the extent of the training we got.
And so these, what were you decontaminating? Helicopters and other vehicles, planes that were going into the area?
Yeah, our helicopters, so we had 12 helicopters, SH-60, HH-60s, that were flying into the area. And every day they would come back, they would be contaminated. They had a group of nuclear guys that were TAD from other places that would basically read. They used
Geiger counter.
Yeah, they had a scanner that would read to show how many CCPM corrected counts per minute, which is the way we read the radiation. And if someone was contaminated, they would take their flight suit, cut it off. They would take their boots and what have you. If someone's skin was contaminated, they would, you know, try to decontaminate. And
were many sailors and Air Force workers contaminated?
Oh, certainly, especially the air crewmen. You know, they had their flights just cut off just about every time they came back from a flight.
So they were going into this area and then coming back to be decontaminated, and you were the one that was checking to see how contaminated they were.
Absolutely.
Now, and you yourself began to realize that as a result of your efforts and obviously others who were there, that you were having some health problems. What happened to you?
Well, I had some immediate problems, which was nausea, headaches, vomiting, stuff like that, which is pretty common for acute, you know, exposure to radiation. But with my concern, and my son also, I mean, I hate to get him involved in this. He's still over in Japan right now with his mother, but, you know, he had a fit of about 3 to 6 months where he vomited uncontrollably 15 to 20 times a day. And he missed over a month of school because he would vomit and they would send him home. But other than that, he was fine. But he couldn't control his vomiting, and that became a serious issue with me, and he still has fits of that to this day, which worries me. But what concerns me most is, you know, there is acute radiation problems where you have, like, the migraines and the headaches, and you get the nausea and the dizziness and the vertigo and stuff like that. But with me, it's the long-term effects that throw the caution out for me, because that's what concerns me most of all, is what might happen to me 10 years down the road.
And we're speaking with Mike Seaborn. He's a sailor, land-based sailor in Japan, who was involved in rescue and decontamination of military, U.S. military forces who were helping out the people of Fukushima. And also joining us is Paul Garner. Now, Paul, you have a suit now that's been filed against TEPCO and the Japanese government, because what you're saying is that not a small number, but a rather large number of people were contaminated and now are ill and threatened with life health problems. Is that the case?
Well, just to be accurate, I started out with one sailor, Lindsay Renee Cooper, who was experiencing a lot of issues that she never had before. She's 22 years old. She's got a two-year-old child at the time. And she decided that it was time for somebody to do something, you know, to take a stand. So she contacted me, and I went to investigate her case, and I soon learned that there are witnesses to what she had been involved in and what she had been subject to as being a boatswain's mate aboard the USS Ronald Reagan on the flight deck. And Lindsay has told us that she was so happy to be participating in a humanitarian effort and be on the front lines, where she was actually right up close to the helicopters and loading supplies into them. And then they came back to the Reagan, and they would have to wash them down to attempt to get the radiation off of them, because the warning devices would go off on their way back. And incidentally, they weren't the only warning devices going off. But the heart of the matter is this. These sailors and other personnel and their support families were there in order to help the people of Japan. And they were put in harm's way because the TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, people who were running the power plant decided to poo-poo the situation and tell everyone in the world, we have it under control. There, you know, nothing to worry about. We can take care of this. You know, we're experts in this field. And it's really not an issue. You don't have to worry about it. So come on in close. So what happened was that Tom Burke, the skipper of the Reagan, and others went of the 7th Fleet, went in, and they did what they could. You know, they went as close as they could, because they were led to believe that it was okay to occupy that part of the sea that they were in. It was deep enough water for the Reagan. And you have to picture this. The Reagan is surrounded at this point. It's gotten there day after the tsunami hits, okay? The water is filled with debris. There's a whole house that goes floating by, they tell me, and cars and other debris, and you can't see the water. It's so thick with debris. Okay. Incidentally,
heading to the United States. We're going to have to wrap up. Just in conclusion,
now there's over 150 people, and every day we're contacted by people who have been affected by this, who are on this side of the ocean, not to mention the people in Japan who are not getting any help from these TEPCO people who run the show.
Okay.
And the reason is, and you know the reason.
they wanted to cover it up, and apparently they don't want to do any studies. Well, I want to thank you, Paul.
And they don't want to spend any money.
They don't want to spend any money. And also the U.S. The USS Reagan is now being being taken care of in Bremerton, Washington, and we understand that there may be injured shipyard workers as well. So I want to thank you, Paul and Mike, for talking about the situation of U.S. service people who are involved in the rescue. And we will be carrying on further information on this story because it's an ongoing story. And obviously, it's not only the people of Japan who were harmed by the nuclear meltdown and continue to be contaminated. So thanks for joining us this morning.
For the opportunity to air these issues so people will know about them.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Paul Garner and Mike Seaborn.